Hello and welcome to the Stinging Fly podcast. I'm your host, Sally Rooney, and joining me today is the writer and scholar, Malatu Uche Okorie. Born in Nigeria, Malatu moved to Ireland in 2006 and began writing during her 8.5 years living in the direct provision system. She has an MPhil in creative writing from Trinity College Dublin and has had work published in various anthologies. Her debut short story collection, This Hostel Life, was shortlisted for the Newcomer of the Year Award at the Irish Book Awards 2018. Malatu, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Sally, for having me.
So on this podcast, we ask writers to choose a piece from the Stinging Flies archives to read and discuss. Malatu, can you tell me a little bit about the piece, or in this case, pieces that you've chosen?
I chose two flash fictions. One is Cute by Ian Shine, and the other is by Jonathan Edwards. And that's FA Cup winners on Open Top Bus Tour of My Village.
So I think maybe we're going to start with a reading of Cute, and then we'll have a little bit of a chat about that, and then we'll read the next piece.
Okay. I always Photoshop pictures of my girlfriend before I put them on Facebook. I take an outline of her jaw and pull one or two points out of place, or smudge a rhubarb blotch onto her laundry white skin. Sometimes I drag the mole above her lip into just the wrong place. Other times, I distort her stomach into a duffy pillow. I tell her I do it to stop my friends wanting to take her away from me, and she laughs and calls me cute. But she never distorts any pictures of me. It makes me pretty uncomfortable having such a beautiful girlfriend. Each time I kiss her pixel perfect lips, I fear it will be the last. Sometimes I sit up at night and go through the doctored pictures on my phone, thinking things might be better if I had a girl like that, with frizzy hair and a crooked nose, a gap in her teeth, or uneven breasts. She comments on some of the pictures. Do you think I look cute? One day, she even posted a picture on my timeline, showing her looking as ugly as a normal person, and I gave it a like. When she came through the door, looking exactly like the photo, I fainted. She said the surgery had cost thousands. I take her out everywhere with me now, and all my friends think she's totally average. Sometimes, we spend the evening trying to Photoshop her new face back into her old one, but we sometimes end up laughing too much to manage it. Then she strokes my hooked nose and my bald patch and says they're cute. I kiss her stubby chin and protruding ears. They could be cuter.
Ian Shine is a short story writer who's been published in The Stinging Fly, Litro magazine, and elsewhere. Cute was published in The Stinging Fly, issue 35, volume 2, winter 2016. So, Malatu, I'm interested to know, first of all, why you chose two flash fiction pieces. Is flash fiction a kind of writing that you're particularly interested in?
Not at all, Sally. I think I was looking through what to pick from the archive, and what did it for me was that I shouldn't have read this first before looking at all the things, but I came across this and the title, you know, I said, okay, let me just have a glimpse at this. And once I read it, I was stuck with the story. So I went through other stories, but I kept coming back to this story. There was just something so interesting about it. And that was, you know, like I couldn't leave it. I wanted to talk about it. That decided it for me, really.
Great. And so what was it then about this specific story, Cute, that gripped you so much? What was that feeling of like, this is the story I want to talk about?
There's just so much. It's a flat fiction, but it's so rich. You know, there's so much underneath the whole story. It is almost like a conversational piece I would be sitting down having with my girlfriends, you know, having a chat around this particular, you know, this guy and this about relationships. It's just epitomizes everything, all the psychological and emotional, you know, or blackmail, you would say, that goes in a relationship. And that's just what gripped me about the story, and that it was just so almost written in this kind of relaxed manner and in this kind of throwaway form, but there's just so much underneath it, so much that can be, you know, that can be pulled out of it. It's just what interested me.
And what fascinated me too when I was reading it was, as you say, it opens in a very relaxed conversational sort of tone. And yet, obviously, as the story develops, it turns into something almost like a horror story. There's this kind of horrifying element. And so it's mixing the kind of anecdotal type of story that it appears to be at first, with a what you might almost call a twist.
Yes.
As the story goes on. Did you find that that a twist was sort of well worked in the text of the story?
Very well. It's great because I've never ever read a flash fiction, a flash fiction. So this was my first yes, absolutely. It wouldn't have been a genre that I'm very familiar with, I see it, but it's just, I don't really, read it, or sure. I don't have any. It's not something I would purchase from a show.
So yeah.
This has opened my eyes in a different way to that genre and how great it is, And it got me thinking: do I waste too many words when I'm writing short stories? Can it be short? Can I put everything into this short form? And is that what you just said? Is just that relaxed mode of the story, and you think, oh gosh, you see that twist, that. There's just something that the author, was just playing around, that manipulative thing, and that, taking the reader, on this journey of reading of this, with horror, as in, it reminds me of the story, we hear these songs all the time. I remember TLC's On Pretty and Christina Aguilera, I Am Beautiful, mm. I don't know if it's I Am Beautiful, You're Beautiful, I'm not sure which.
Yes, I know the song that you're beautiful. Talking about. Yeah.
But then it's just, it's the same theme, that runs through those songs. Well, he twisted his, this is like a beautiful girl being made to look ugly just to satisfy the boyfriend, and that's just, that was interesting. The fact that he did it the other way around, he played it the other way, photoshopping her pictures. And there's so much that could be said about the story, Sally. It started off with him, you see him distorting this girl's pictures, and then, and she never, and in the second paragraph, he says she never distorted any picture of his, and it makes you think, I wonder why, mm. Anyway.
And it's about that relationship, isn't it? Even though in a way it's a sort of surreal, absurd story, it's about a relationship that has a real texture. As you say, when he points out that he was distorting pictures of her and posting them online for people to look at, but that she never did it to him, we're learning something about how these two characters relate to each other. And in a way, it's about a gender relationship as well, that a man has this investment in a woman's physical appearance.
Absolutely.
And that's something that's familiar, even though this story makes it strange.
It is. It's something that goes around. It's everywhere. It's in. I can think back to a relationship that would have been like that. Not in terms of but if probably he had he could distort pictures of me to form an image of what this person wanted. That could be the case. I can think of so many girlfriends that would have been in this kind of relationship where there's always that kind of you have this man who wants you to look a certain way. So it's a story that's all around us. That is it's in every almost in a way in every relationship you can think of, and that's just what struck me about the story. The fact that he did it so. He did it so well. He took us on this journey. And you wonder about the girl as well. It raises questions to me about her. Who is she? Is she just, yes, is there something, is there a control in her as well, in terms of going to change herself for this man? Is she trying to control him to keep him? There's so many questions that you can, underlying questions that you can pull out of the story.
And we've touched a little bit on the sort of the social obsession with beauty that's so predominant, that this story flips quite neatly. Usually we're obsessed with an ideal, sort of an idealized image of beauty, whereas this story is obsessed with something that's an antithesis of that ideal, searching for the opposite of that ideal. Did that make you uncomfortable while you were reading it? This sort of the idea that he would take a beautiful face and intentionally make it into something, ugly. Was there something uncomfortable about that for you when you were reading it?
Definitely. It was very, it was an uncomfortable read. And that makes you wonder as well, because, it makes you wonder that, actually, now that you've said it, it kind of brings to mind that you can never, when you're in the wrong place or you're with the wrong person, you can never actually satisfy that person. Because even though she was a beautiful girl, he still, you find relationships where the guy is always, jealous of the woman when she goes out and all of these things. So this is what the story is talking about now, in terms of, okay, he wanted her to be ugly to be able to feel more comfortable with that, with a partner. And that's just what, the writer played the antithesis of what we usually hear of that kind of body image and, you know, body conscious. That, you know, it doesn't matter how beautiful you make yourself. There will still be someone. If you're in the wrong relationship, the partner could always want something different, could twist you into thinking that, you know, what he wants is the best thing, is the best way for you to stay in that relationship.
And as you're saying, it has to do with, and the narrator says it has to do with jealousy, has to do with other men. And in a way, it's as if beauty is power for that woman. Her beauty makes her powerful, yes. And her power makes her partner anxious and
yes.
insecure.
And uncomfortable.
So
yes.
that has to do, again, with trying to track this dynamic between them in such a short space of time. I mean, this story is really just a few paragraphs. We're watching something shift and change between these two people. They become almost like real people for us.
Absolutely. And it brings to mind how great the writer is, you know, the craft of this story. It's very short, but everything in it, isn't it? You know, you don't, the whole, you get an image of you have a sense of who the man is, you have a sense of who the woman is, and you just have, and then the whole thing about relationship is just packed in these few words, you know, which was very interesting. I found it so impactful. And after reading it, I tried to read other things and it just felt like there were too many words in every other thing. And I just kept coming back because he just said it so concisely, you know, in this, you have everything about relationship, about, you know, gender issues, about, you know, how we perceive ourselves as women, when we feel that we have to change ourselves and it, sometimes for our partners, just so that, you know, to have that kind of comfort within, you know, for them to be comfortable, not even for us to be comfortable, but for them to be comfortable and to trust us. It's just so many issues were raised in this little, you know, story that was fascinating.
And one more issue that I think the story touches on is the internet and the power of the internet to shape our images of ourselves and our images of other people. Because the whole story begins, the whole triggering incident is that he's putting these photographs online, these doctored images of his own girlfriend. So I wonder whether the story could have worked at all without that, without the internet there in the background.
It probably would, but then it gives us a sense of, there's much more sense of power in terms of, you know, having that internet and having that the fact that he's putting it out there for the world to see, that Facebook, and then she sees it, you know, and then she's seeing how he not only wants her to look, but how the world probably would love her to look to make him feel more comfortable. I think the fact that he was sharing it with this other, you know, invisible people made it all the more powerful, I would say, you know. And of course, it brings the whole idea of photoshopping pictures and all of that, you know, and then creating this image of her, which probably without the internet would not have been that, you know, that strong.
I think you're so right. It draws this invisible community into
yes.
the story. They're not on the page as such, but they're so present in how the story unfolds.
In the decision making
yeah.
of everything.
Absolutely, yeah. And so the final thing that I want to talk about is the ending of the story, because the ending seemed to me, reading it and hearing you read it, to imply that once this woman had this incredibly expensive surgery that made her look plain, all was well. Their relationship sort of found an equilibrium. What did you make of that ending? Again, for me, it kind of made me feel uncomfortable or slightly unsettled, the idea that we were maybe supposed to believe that this had solved some kind of problem.
I know. I think if you read into the ending, there's a second line where he says he still spends, we spend the evening, now it's both of them now, trying to Photoshop her new face back into her old one, you know, but we always end up laughing too much to manage it. Then she strokes. So there's still that continuous wanting, that continuous you can never be. And I think people who do a lot of plastic surgeries, you know, if you watch any of these kind of shows, we tell you that there's never an end to it. You know, you want this and then tomorrow you want to get something else and next tomorrow you want to. So I think the ending, though, is very uncomfortable to read. But I found it very uncomfortable to read because you could see that there's still that dissatisfaction, you know, even though they're happy, he's happy with her, you know, but then there's still an underlying, you know, dissatisfaction between with the man himself.
Yeah.
He's still, all is well or appears to be well, but then he's still a little bit dissatisfied with, you know, this image that he has created.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for that reading. I think we're now going to hear another story and then maybe have another little bit of discussion about it.
Okay. The second story that I chose is the FA Cup winners on Open Top bus tour of my village. It's quite a long title.
Yes.
I was down the park with my boy having a kickabout when he came round the corner. Even from that distance, there was no mistaking the Versace smile of the star striker, the fairy tale jaw of the captain. And was that the manager? Cheeks red as the last inch of wine in the bottle, drunk at sunset in a hillside town in the south of France, from where you could look down on the world like you owned it. Within minutes, the village was gathered, fathers and sons chanting grown men's names, sisters and mothers touching up makeup and cleavage. The players looked scared. The driver scratched his head, fiddled with the sat-nav. Then Paul, a legend in the village since losing his job, giving all his time to the under-10s, forced his way on board, holding his son's autograph book like a begging bowl. We watched with amazement, then with anger, as a Chilean winger, the one we would recognize from the Nike billboard, raised his fist to Paul and floored him. That started it. Suddenly, everyone was holding something. A rake, a mop, a Stanley knife, a car bumper. We went for the tires, then the windows. As the judge said later, in the absence of CCTV, and given the unreliable nature of witness statements, it was impossible to decide on responsibility. But let's just say this. It's easy to imagine, isn't it, what it would feel like to hold the FA Cup over your head, then bring it down, crack, on 20 million quid's worth of right ankle, as the man you've been in love with for 5 years shakes and begs for mercy.
Jonathan Edwards is a Welsh poet and editor. His debut poetry collection, My Family and Other Superheroes, won the Costa Book Award for Poetry in 2014. FA Cup winners on Open Top Bus Tour of My Village was published in Stinging Fly, Issue 27, Volume 2, Spring 2014. So, Milatu, same question again to begin. Why was this the piece, one of the pieces that you chose to read for us today?
Once I read Cute, I went in search of other flax fictions and, you know, I was just going through them. What struck me about this story is just how well I recognized all the characters. As soon as I read the first sentence, I knew who that man was. You know, I see him in the park with his son, like I could picture him. He's just so, the description was just so strong and great. And, you know, the boss, the star striker with the Versace smile, you know who they are, you can tell. And then the fairy tale jaw of the captain, you can always imagine this, the manager and all of that. So it was just I love just the characters, how, you know, the characterization of the story and how he developed it and how, you know, he just took you right from the first sentence right into the story and dropped you there, and you can just see all of these people and recognize them. And that's just what brought me into the story immediately. And I loved it. It's a funny story. And there's just, it's everything. It's the fathers and I can just, even the fathers and sons shout, you see them when you're watching football games, you know, how they, you know, Ronaldo, you know, and all of the names. I think for me, this story is just how, it's great in terms of how, even without naming names and giving all of this background information, how much the writer was able to convey to us as a reader without all of these artifacts that you find in stories.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you say that flash fiction may make a story writer feel like they could do with cutting down, certainly as a novelist, I felt like, wow, I'm packing way too much info in. I could do this a lot in a much more effective, efficient way. So if the last piece that we read touched on sort of public image, the public image, you know, of posting images on the internet, this story touches on a much more public image of celebrity.
Yes.
And I felt like you felt the characterization of these footballers immediately made me feel how famous they were. Like,
yes.
I just knew the extent to which the smile, the jawline conveyed so much meaning to these people who were watching their bus move into the village. How do you think the story renders that feeling of celebrity? And what is it telling us about what it meant for those people, you know, those famous people to enter this otherwise ordinary scene?
I think, just even with the way they were received, the people, the villagers who gathered to see these people in this tour in their village, you know, that sense of it's something that we recognize all the time. You know, you see it, or you probably watch it on television. So we're used to that kind of, or the world is getting used to that kind of image conscious thing. And then, and for the for the players themselves, the there's a line there that apart from the manager, who I think was feeling very, very, you know, very proud, which of course you can understand why. You can always tell that probably that they're uncomfortable as well, you know, with all these, you know, this attention, you know, because he said that they were scared, and that shows you that there's a bit of discomfort that comes with being, you know, this celebrity, which sometimes we don't, you know, we don't usually, there's that thing about wanting to look good and wanting to look a certain way, but there's also that underlying fear that is never touched on and which the writer brought out, you know, in this story. I'm looking for the line where he said that now. The players look scared, you know, there's just that line, that short sentence, which tells you that they're kind of like a bit, you know, like there's that fear of whatever display is going on around them. And that brings you into it in terms of, and I can understand why, even though there's that image and that adoration that comes from fans and all of that, there's just that underlying fear and all that. I think so.
Absolutely. And as soon as the story introduces that sense of fear, that sense of exposure, it immediately takes it so much further, and the story becomes quite frighteningly violent very quickly, yes, on a sort of turn, an unexpected turn. How did you think that the writer went about conveying that sense of violence again in such a short, confined space and without all that much graphic description of what was taking place? Like, a lot of it we had to sort of guess in our heads what had happened, and yet for me at least the feeling of violence was very intense.
It was, and I think that's what, okay, I'm going somewhere else now, probably, I think that's what made the ending, you know, kind of sad it a little bit for me, because I could understand the part of the players, that fear, you know. The writer actually made us understand why the guy who hit, whoever he was, the striker, who the Chilean winger who hit the ball, you know, why he did what he did, because it's that sense of fear, that sense of danger, you know, that of him coming forward like that. But then we as a reader, we have a sense of both world, that this was why he stepped up to talk to him and then to ask for the autograph, and that this was why there's that sense of fear this was how, you know, you could read it both ways, but then there's this part of me that felt a bit sympathy for the players as well, for whatever it was that happened afterwards. And I think that's what brought, kind of ruined the ending for me, that there was just that thing about that misunderstanding that led to this, you know, big drama at the end of it all. And you're just wondering, could it have been avoided? You know, what could have been done to avoid that?
This outbreak of violence. And I do think there are two possible ways of reading the story, to say on one hand that it was sort of like an unexpected rupture, that violence sort of came out of nowhere. But then on the other hand, maybe it was there from the beginning. As you say, the players looked scared. As soon as they saw what kind of situation they were in, they knew there was something.
Yeah.
Potentially dangerous about it. And I do want to talk again about the form of this story and how much it manages to condense, because there's that bit towards the end where it says, as the judge said, says later. Yes. So immediately we've left the scene.
Yes, yeah. One scene I'm going to another. Can I go? I actually, after reading the stories, I went around and I just looked at flash fictions, and I thought, okay, let me find out tips and rules of them. So just, and some of them, you know, played into what I have here. It says start in the middle, go straight to the heart of the story, which, you know, the stories don't use too many characters, which I think the FA Cup winners on top did, but it did it successfully. You know, so use of a name is not always useful, it says additional. So I understood why there was just, there's no name used in any of the stories, because when you use a name, sometimes you have to, which I do some in my writing. And that was a secret reason why I don't do it. I don't use names sometimes, because of the additional. When you use a name, you have to give the character personality. You have to place them. So there's just so many things that comes with use of a name. And I saw that a name is not always, it saves additional was elsewhere. So that's one. Avoid punchline endings. I think with the FA Cup winners on top, I think there was just that kind of drum roll, you know, kind of like ending to it, you know, and that was just, but then with the cute, that was not part of it. But it's why I did, I think it's just, it's the fact that they used, there's just this scene. It was just, it's just one theme in Cute, but then it was used so well that it was so rich. You know, these are some of the roles that, you know, are the tips, let me call them tips, that with flash fiction, that, that even though it was just one plot line or one theme, it ran across the story. It was used so successfully that you can't even, like, you don't miss not hearing of any other, that there was just not this multiple things going on around you. It was still a complete story. And then skip as much of the background story as a, anyway, I just read, I don't know why I went to look at the rules or the tips of the story, but for me, I just wanted to see how successfully these two writers use, you know, use these things and these tools and this or tips or rules of the game, and how, and I thought that they did that beautifully. The only letdown for me, which I shouldn't be talking on air, it's just the ending of this. I wish I could, you know, like, do something about it. Probably because I sympathize with the players a little bit,
too.
And that, you know, that kind of like, oh gosh, so there was just nothing that could, you know, it was just, there's just that sense of a loss for them, I suppose, that, you know, made it a bit sad for me.
It is a sad ending, a very harsh and cruel ending, particularly if, like me and like you, you sympathize automatically with these players who've just won the FA Cup. I'm so interested in the idea that this exercise, this agreeing to come on our podcast, which I'm very glad you've done, brought you in the direction of reading flash fiction, not only reading flash fiction pieces, but reading about the background, the sort of limitations and constrictions of the form and the sort of hints and tips of how to construct. You obviously approach, you know, as I think we all do as writers, you approach these stories as a writer as well as a reader, and instantly you want to know, how do you go about constructing this? What do you think that you learned for your own writing, if anything, from the exercise of reading these and thinking about a different form, a form that you haven't worked in before?
Oh my God. Even just so many things, even just the fact that I looked at the fact, you know, like, start in the middle, you know, sometimes the fact that this story could have a beginning and end, I'm not thinking to myself that every story I write, I'm just going to look at it and go from the middle and see, can I take away the start and just start from the main story itself, from the, you know, the heart of the story immediately, and go down from there. So that's something that I think I will use in future in my stories, and see how I can, you know, utilize that little tidbit of information. And then, of course, it just validated something about the use of a name that sometimes I just did not do, you know. It made it interesting to me that, okay, somebody else is thinking the way I think sometimes, you know, because I do that out of laziness, just because I can't be bothered, you know, trying to put all these things together. But then it's to find out that it's actually, you know, a form in another genre of fiction was interesting, you know. And I'm just seeing the fact that sometimes these punchline endings that can come in stories, and I admit sometimes I seek it myself in my writing, you know, just having that kind of ending that's like, ooh, you know, it's not necessary, you know, kind of, you know, slowly bring it to, I'll probably have the ending somewhere and then, you know, roll it down a little bit too. So there's just so many things that I learned from it, but it's just, but the most fantastic is just how much, you know, you can do with just a line, which, you know, and you hear all the time, you know, but seeing it, reading it in a flag, I never thought I would, I've seen some flash visions that once I start, I kind of like lose interest a little bit, but this was just so, this too, and so many other things that I saw in your archive were so great that I was lost for choice. Like, what do I pick? Which do I go with here? You know, so it's just how well they were done. And I would say, there's just so much that could be said. You have to read widely before you sneer at anything. You know, so that's it.
And I do, and I mean, I think reading widely and reading forms and genres that we're maybe not familiar with before, one of the great little pleasures for me as a writer, and you've just spoken about it now, is finding that people do the same things that you do.
Yes.
And thinking, oh, well, maybe I wasn't just doing it for no reason. Maybe
yes.
There's some rhyme or reason here. And then also, conversely, as you point out, getting a piece of advice or learning a technique that you previously hadn't been doing and wondering, How can I incorporate this into what I do? Absolutely. Even if what I'm trying to do might seem very different, how can I learn from this and take it back? And do you feel that sometimes, so you're learning about these tips and tricks, that taking them into your own work and just trying them out can teach you something about what you're doing, even if you don't end up sort of using them or incorporating
them? I can tell just even, you know, the fact that he says, I can just sitting down here think of a story that I would, if I start from the middle, it's a story that has already been done, but I'm trying to rework it a little bit. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe I should try going to the starting from the middle of this story. Maybe that would work. Maybe this is what I've been struggling with without realizing, because I knew that the beginning was not great for me. So maybe if I go out and just start, boom, in the middle, maybe that would be the answer that I've been searching for. So just that tip already is somewhere. I've stored it somewhere in my head and I'm thinking, okay. I'm
turning the cog.
Yes, and I've
had that experience too. Thomas Morris, who's another former editor of the Stinging Fly, about a short story that I was drafting and he had read parts of, told me, is this where the story would end if you were telling this story to one of your friends? If you just started telling this story and this was, you know, just to one of your friends over lunch, is this where the story would end? And he wasn't saying it again as a rule or a limitation, but it was like a question that I could take back and ask myself.
Yes.
And even if the answer was no, it, you know, that it doesn't matter, it still made me think differently.
Absolutely.
And maybe that's why as writers, we go after these tips and tricks. And I do it too all the time.
Absolutely. I think as a writer, you always, a part of you is always kind of thinking about stuff that you're writing and how you can make it better or how you can rework it and how it can be, you know, how you can just utilize it in terms of, you know, your writing per se. And the flat fiction for me, it's wonderful. I'm so happy I did this, you know, just because it opened me up to something that I would not ordinarily, like I would think that it's too maybe generational kind of thing for me, you know, that it's just, I don't want to sound ageist or anything like that, but that would be, you know, like I would think, oh, I wouldn't enjoy it or something. And it's fascinating just reading it and finding how much, how, you know, creative and how wonderful it is and how talented the writers in this genre are, actually, to be able to do this much with this little, you know, this few words. Just the FA Cup winners and all that. There were so many. I look at the archive. There were so many I wanted to pick, but I chose these. Cute for me was you know, the one that I was gonna. But then I wanted the second one, and I chose the FA Cup winners just because the characters, with every line he introduced a character, or with every sentence he introduced a character. But then he did it so well without so many words that I could picture, like I could see them, I could picture that I know who they are, like I know how that I recognize them, you know, all of these things. Even the Paul himself, the guy who he named, who is a legend. Yeah, I know someone like that, you know, I do know someone like that. Not personally, but I can think about, oh, is that, you know, probably this person that I know who runs this under 10s or under 12s could have been someone, you know, that had lost their job and then devoted their time to doing these things for kids. So it's just how much that this writer was able to bring into the story with just these few words in terms of his characterization. Sometimes it takes us so much to write as a, you know, as a writer. It was just brilliant. And then cute as well. The fact that the writer was able to raise this topic that goes on in, you know, in a, this kind of emotionally disturbing story, to be able to write something of that intensity, you know, with just and be playful with it, you know, almost like a lackadaisical manner in the way he approached it, you know. I thought that was just brilliant, and I enjoyed reading both of them, and it just opened my eyes, like, more flash fictions, please, you know.
Emotionally dystopian is, I think, a fantastic way to describe not only cute, but in a way, both of the stories that you've chosen today. So thank you for that. The final question I want to ask is, I read somewhere, I don't know if this is accurate, that you're now working on your second book. And I wonder if when you're in the process of working on something new, you feel you approach reading differently. Do you feel like a different kind of reader when you're working on something than when you're sort of finished a project or not working at the moment? Or maybe you're someone who writes all the time.
No, I am not. someone who writes all the time.
Me neither. Oh God. So, yeah.
And when I'm doing my first draft, I just read. But I don't think I think reading has changed for me now. If I'm pretty kind of honest now, I think reading has changed. Reading has changed from just something that I used to do for enjoyment to something that I now look at for certain things. Not necessarily, not that I go out looking for, but I take notes. That's okay. Let me phrase it differently. I take note of things in a different way than I did in the past. In the past, I would read and not even recognize that, oh, this was what made this story. It would just be like a story. Oh, I enjoyed that story. You know, that was a beautiful story. But now when I read, I look at how the writer phrased some words, you know, some of the things like the writer said, how did they use this sentence? How did they, you know, like every sentence now is a picture for me. I look at the picture. How well did this sentence give me a picture of what the writer is? So it's a different kind of reading. So I wouldn't say it's just because I'm right. I don't usually read to when I'm doing the first draft, it's a different kind of reading. You know, when I'm redrafting now, it's a different kind of. So there's always that kind of different styles of reading. I don't understand, but yeah, but reading has changed for me completely since I started writing. I read differently. I read with a much more keener sense of as a person, just because I admire it, and I think it enriches what I'm reading more. That's the thing. I think in the past I was just read a story, but now I have more respect for, you know, a writer or whatever book I'm reading. I'm like, oh my God, this person is amazing. Look how they, so it's much more, it's a different kind of feel to me. I have more respect for the writer, or, you know, I praise them more in my head now. So it's a different thing. Yeah.
Well, that's a nice feeling. Malati, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Oh, thank you, Sally. Thank you for having me.
Listeners, thank you for joining us too, and we'll be talking to you again on some future episode of the Stinging Fly podcast. Thanks very much.